This is the final whistle on Ocean FM. Tonight, Donegal's early Christmas present, the return of Michael Murphy to County Colours. Manna Spoils with us to discuss. Two bronze medals for Sligo kickboxers at the European Championships in Athens. We'll talk to Michael McDermott, who's in the Greek capital. Gertrude's Roisin Molloy joins us to talk about her stellar season with Athlone Town. And Maastricht isn't just about EU treaties anymore. It's the centre of the Gaelic football universe for Killeara Strandhill for the next couple of weeks. We'll explain all. Yes, I'm not sure what the Dutch word for welcome is, but I'm sure we'll pick that one up before the month is out. Welcome to the programme. This is Austin O'Callaghan, and here are the contact details for the final whistle if you want to get in touch. 083 3500 530 by WhatsApp or text. sport@oceanfm.ie is the email address, and you'll find us on Twitter at @OceanFMSport. Also coming up, Sligo Rovers' first new signing of the closed season was made today. Striker Francely Lombotto has joined from Galway United. He's on the programme. And Martin Breheny will join us later on to talk about his new book he's written alongside Donald Keenan called Pulse of the Nation, which will surely generate plenty of debate in counties Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim. But first, in the week that's in it, only one story outperformed Donald Trump on social media this week in this part of the world: the return of the Murph.
We have him! Delighted to accept this trophy on behalf of the Donegal team. It's an absolute fantastic honour and privilege here to climb these steps on behalf of each and every one of these players to my left, the management team out there, and each and every one of the people of Donegal.
He was just an unreal talent. A wonderful captain, a great leader of men. That's why Jim McGuinness appointed him captain. He took over.
Here's the man to do it, Lacey again, switching it across, looking for Murphy. Murphy coming through here. Murphy goes for the goal. Oh! What a start, Lacey to Murphy. 2 minutes, 27 seconds, and Murphy has cracked the back of the start from heaven.
Are Michael Senior and Michael Junior similar in personality?
No, I think he's like his mother. He has his mother's traits. I don't think he's like me, no. Honestly, I don't. And maybe it's not a bad thing either.
Area. Here's Michael Murphy to lunge this one into the river end. He's been doing it for years. Club and county, he's around since 2007. Donegal are happy to have him. Donegal are happy to take the lead. Donegal 6, Armagh 5.
There's no doubt about it. Like, Michael Murphy is the best player ever left Donegal.
He's been a leader since he came into the team. He was appointed captain at 22 years of age.
Murphy soars into the air. What a catch with his back turn. Oh, that is glorious. Absolutely top class. Beautifully in there to Murphy. Great shot, great goal.
Yeah, well, that was the Michael Murphy montage that we put together for this programme exactly 2 years ago this week, when the Donegal captain announced his retirement from inter-county football. Looks like it's an unfinished edit now. There might be another piece to add into it, because the Glenswilly man is back training with the county squad at the age of 35. Donegal GAA confirming the news yesterday after a few sightings of the big man in his training gear at the county GAA Centre of Excellence in Convoy in recent weeks. Let's have a chat with another former All-Ireland winner for Donegal, Manus Boyle, who's on the line. Well, Manus, Jim McGuinness has a proven track record of producing a rabbit from the hat either at the end or the start of every season. Where does this one rank?
Well, I would say, you're definitely, it's one of the top ones that he could pull out of the hat, especially, a couple of years ago. Michael was adamant that was it. He's not somebody that would go back just for the sake of it. That's not the way he's played over the years. That's not the kind of gentleman he is. And for Jim to persuade him, first of all, to go back, knowing the workload that he'll face and that he's prepared to do it, I think that's testament to both Jim and to Michael.
As you mentioned, Jim McGuinness has tried to cajole Michael out of retirement on a couple of occasions since he came back as manager, and each time we gathered that Michael Murphy was pretty emphatic in saying, no, my inter-county career is done. So what do you think might have changed now?
I'm watching a few of the championship games this year, the Donegal Club Championship games, and especially with Glenswilly involved, Michael was to the forefront for them. He has lost none of the swagger or his ability to kick scores, and definitely was in fairly trim and good shape all throughout the summer. Maybe the bit of a stint he done with the Rules Committee encouraged him to have a look with the pressure that Jim was putting on him, and I'm sure that didn't stop just because the season was over. I'm sure they put more pressure on him, especially after the Galway game, knowing how we probably hadn't got much of an impact from the bench. And I think Jim knew that time that his squad probably wasn't strong enough. Looking around the county, yes, definitely there's other players that you could take in, and you would have to work with them for maybe the next 2 or 3 years, to bring them to the level of inter-county. But when you have somebody of the ability and of the reputation of Michael, and he agrees to do the work. I mean, people think it's just a matter, maybe they do, maybe they don't think that it's just a matter of just going back. First of all, Michael has to prepare himself to go to train, first and foremost, because he's been away from that level for maybe 2, 2.5 years now. So that's going to take a huge amount of work, a huge amount of commitment, and a lot of sacrifices, not just by him, but of everybody around him. So for him to take that decision, it probably wasn't taken lightly. But it could have been a culmination of things. And I think anybody that watched him playing for Glenswilly during the summer would have been, asking the question, was there anything left in the big man, especially at inter-county level?
And I know we're told increasingly that Gaelic football has become a young man's game, but at 35, you cannot beat experience or leadership.
Yeah, and, one of the things that I think probably is missing from the modern game is somebody that stands back and just maybe takes control of the game, because a lot of the game now is played at 100 mile an hour, and maybe those new rules that will come in will actually make the game that bit worse. In terms of the pace of the game that it's going to go to. But the fact that you can have three players inside as target men, it's also an opportunity for those three players to rest. So it gives managers the opportunity to throw three lads into rest, and the three fresh lads that were inside, they can go out the field. And we all know from Michael's past that he could, if you really wanted him, he probably could play the edge of the square or in goals. But I think that's probably somewhere where Jim and the rest of the Donegal management team will see him. I'm sure there was huge pressure from Colm Anthony McFadden and Neil McGee as well on Michael to come back, not just Jim. Two former teammates, I know they're all good buddies. So when you have that sort of pressure on you, and maybe there was an inkling that he probably didn't leave it on at the level that he wanted to leave it, and he's getting another opportunity now to do it, and he's prepared to do the work 100%. Everybody in Donegal will be behind him anyway, Austin,
I'm sure they will. And I'm just thinking finally, Manus, the draft National League fixtures are doing the rounds this week. Donegal's first match on the 26th of January will be away to Kerry. Normally there'd be one, maybe two supporters' buses being booked up for that trip. There might be a few more for that opening match this time around.
Maybe. I mean, Austin, I do think it'll take Michael a long, you know, a long 3, 4, 5 months to get to the level that he needs to get, because, you know, when I kind of left the inter-county scene before the age of 32, and I know by the time I was 35, I don't think I would have been going back to it. But the level of work that you've lost out on by not continuing puts a lot of pressure on your body when you go back to do it. So they'll take things very slowly. They'll make sure that he doesn't break down, because if he gets one or two niggly injuries, it'll create a problem for them in terms of getting them on the field to play. So they'll be very careful. They'll probably have earmarked maybe some part of the National League for him, but I have no doubt Jim McGuinness's mind and the rest of them, and especially Michael Murphy's mind, that this is solely for a championship. I think a lot of people within the management group, and with especially talking to the players that played last year, they felt that they let go, that maybe one was, they dropped the ball against Galway. They had a great opportunity to get to the final, and I think that's playing on a lot of them. So you could see the addition of Michael come the championship, you know, will give the rest of the squad, the rest of the players, a huge lift. I know there'll be a couple of new players involved as well, but I have no doubt that Jim's total focus will be on the championship and getting Michael fit for that. I'm not sure that he'll play much or many games within the National League, but I definitely see when as in the great words of John Zadardi, when the sun is high in the sky and the grass is freshly cut, that you'll see Murphy step over the white line in the Ulster Championship.
Well, either way, Manus, I think 2025 looks a lot more interesting for Donegal fans going into the new year. Manus Boyle, we'll leave it there. Thank you for now.
Pleasure.
And the National League fixtures will be confirmed over the next 7 to 8 days. You may have seen the draft list doing the rounds at the moment online. We're going to take you to Athens next, where Billy Dolan Geary from the Sligo Magendu Kickboxing Club has this evening secured a bronze medal in his full contact semi-final at the WACO European Senior Kickboxing Championships in Greece. This adds to a bronze from Kalluni Kickboxing Club's Nathan Nooney in the Kicklight division this week. Those two among six Sligo competitors on the Ireland team in Athens. The championships continue until Sunday, but earlier Sligo Magendu coach Michael McDermott spoke to us shortly after Billy's semi-final contest against the current world champion from Finland.
The standard is very high. Billy's third time to go away to represent Ireland, and previously just two little bits of accidents or just the draw just didn't make it. But both himself and Oisin this year got through their first round. Billy got through his second round against a Turkish boy and got through to the existing world and European champion. He's a Finnish boy called Exeli. So, yeah, he's a really good fighter. And Billy has fought him a couple of times now, but he's getting closer to him. And but he had a good performance today. He's a very complete fighter, this guy. And Billy fought really well. You know, that's, you can only do your best on the day. He gave a great account of himself.
And we are talking about the senior European champions here. So in terms of this continent, it is the creme de la creme.
It is, for sure. And of course, I mean, there are other smaller organisations, but WACO is the creme de la creme, as you call it. And again, you know, Olympic recognition round the corner. We're still waiting for it, but the process with Olympics is very slow. But, you know, yes, there's an excellent standard. And I suppose what we were seeing, I mean, the preparations for the Olympics and for getting in there, is everything is tightening up, and it's you know, all of the rules are very tightly monitored now. Whereas previously, I mean, they always were, but they're even more tightly monitored now in terms of everything, you know, and behaviour and that, you know.
Sure. Just a word on your other competitor in Athens this week, Michael Oisin Lee, who fought well but came up against a strong Spanish opponent, I gather.
Absolutely, yeah. Could be comparable with the opponent that Billy faced. A very complete fighter, and we were looking at his record there. He's around for quite a number of years, but very active on the European circuit. The number of World Cups that he has gone to this year and attended and did well and won. You know, he was ranked number one athlete in his category for this event. And Oisin gave him a great fight, took it to him, didn't show him any respect, but a very tight guy, very hard to penetrate, leaves very few openings. But great learning curve for Oisin. And again, you know, once he's at this stage now, he knows that he's up there with best, and it's just about polishing the technique and polishing and probably putting in more European-type events, you know.
Sure.
Really great performance.
Yeah, and Nathan Nooney from Killooney also getting amongst the medals in his division. So the Sligo clubs representing Ireland well in Athens this week, Michael.
Absolutely, yeah. There was four lads, three boys and a girl from the Killooney club. And they all give a good account of themselves, you know. And Brandon fighting in the low kick, and the rest of them fighting on the mats. But yeah, great. There's a tradition of martial arts going back a long number of years in Sligo, and I think it's still strong and it's great. There's a great passion for it, and I think it's well accepted, you know, that it's a good sport and there's no messing around. We train hard and we compete hard as well.
That's Michael McDermott speaking to us from the European Senior Kickboxing Championships in Athens, where Sligo McGendo's Billy Dolan Geary and Killooney Kickboxing Club's Nathan Nooney have won bronze medals for Ireland this week. Well, in soccer in the last few hours, Sligo Rovers have made their first signing of the closed season by recruiting striker Francely Lombotto from Galway United. He's 24 and has dual citizenship, Ireland and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Lombotto spent 4 seasons at AM&DC Park. He can also operate as a winger. The deal is for next season. Rovers say Lombotto has agreed a pre-contract and will officially join the club on December the 1st. The player's been telling our reporter Donald Ryan this evening how the move came about.
Yeah, I think my agent and John had a conversation at first, and then John got on to me, and then we met up and then we spoke, and the rest is history.
And given that Sligo Rovers played a very kind of aggressive kind of brand of football last year, very fluid football style of play, was that something that drew you to the club?
Yeah, definitely. The quality of players that they have, midfielders, the way they play, their patterns of play, you know what they're going to do, but you can't stop it. Like, so it was nice to see and nice to be part of now.
You can see yourself slotting in there, no problem.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And obviously, Francely, you were teammates with Wilson Mweru before he came up the N17 to Sligo. Were you talking to him a bit about the move, sussing out the place, see what he thought, or how did all that come about?
No, I left it last minute to surprise him. And at first, when I told him, I might be coming down. He didn't really believe me. But yeah, I know Vincent for a long time now, so it's going to be good to be back together. And
I suppose handy to have a familiar face around the place as well.
Yeah. It's going to be nice because obviously me and Wilson grew up together. We played under 17s all the way up to the first team together. So it's good to have a familiar face, like you said.
And how do you feel your season in the Premier Division went last year?
I think I didn't get the full opportunity to showcase what I could actually do. But in the games that I did play, I felt I did do myself justice in regards to like the game against Sligo, Pats. I think I did well. There's definitely areas I can improve, and I don't doubt that. And under John, I definitely think I will improve, and I'll show everyone what they need to see.
What exactly will fans see from Francis Lombardo next year?
They'll see the best of me.
Simple as that. Francely Lombotto, the new striker signing for Sligo Rovers today. He has joined for next season, and he was speaking to Donal Ryan. Well, next to Gerchi native Roisin Molloy, who is one of six players to be shortlisted for the 2024 Women's SSE Airtricity League Premier Division Player of the Year. Molloy, you know, helped Athlone Town win a first ever League of Ireland title this season, and they also reached the FAI Cup final as holders for the second consecutive season, only to lose 6-1 to Shelburne in that decider. But her performances throughout this campaign mean she is one of three Athlone Town players to be included in the final shortlist. This evening she's been speaking to The Final Whistle about her nomination for Player of the Year and about the season in general and how it compares to winning the Cup for the first time ever 12 months ago.
Yeah, I think last season, I suppose when Ciarán came in, the only competition or cup that we could win at that time was the FAI Cup, so to win that was obviously really special. But yeah, this season, you know, we set out at the start of the year and the main goal was definitely to win the league. So to achieve that and to win the first league title for Athlone was a great feeling. And yeah, I think it definitely was probably a better or more successful season than last season, I'd say.
And in terms of the league, what clicked this year, would you say?
I think just that consistency every week. We'd kept majority of the group, and then to add some quality as well. And then just consistently performing every week. And I think we never got too ahead of ourselves, and we just always focused on the next game. And yeah, eventually it all clicked. And even though we lost a lot of players through injuries, everyone stuck together and we eventually got over the line at the end of the season, which was a great feeling.
And as an attacking threat, it certainly clicked, from Madison Gibson on one flank to Brenda Abbey up the centre to Roisin Molloy up another flank. As an attacking threat, Athlone were good to watch this year.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the main aspects of our play in terms of we like to get the ball wide, 1v1s, and get the ball in the box. And then when Brenda came in the summer, she just couldn't stop scoring. So we just kept trying to get the ball into her. But I think in terms of attacking, everything seemed to click. And then obviously Maddie had an outstanding season, and she really came up with the goals at the important times as well.
And I know the last person who wants to give Roisin Molloy plaudits is Roisin Molloy herself, but you are one of the nominees for the League of Ireland's Player of the Season. That must be a nice honour to get on a personal level.
Yeah, it's really nice to be nominated for an award like that. I was quite surprised, to be honest. But it's being named among the other girls, like the quality, it was really nice to get that sort of recognition. And to see Laurie and Maddie both on our team as well, I think it was great for Athlone and the club. I think any of the girls in Athlone could have been nominated. It was a real team effort this year.
Yeah, Athlone Town's Laurie Ryan and the aforementioned Maddie Gibson, the other two Athlone players nominated, as you say. Describe the night of when you clinched the league title, what the emotions were like that night.
Yeah, it was a strange feeling. I don't know if it really hit us that night that we'd actually won, especially when we have another game the following week. I think the initial feeling was just relief. It was really, really special. And then getting to celebrate with the girls and it finally realising that we'd won the league was really special.
It certainly was. I don't know if I'm allowed to ask you about the FAI Cup final, because you went into the final against Shelburne as defending champions after that memorable penalty shootout victory last season. Was that just a freak first half hour, the way the goals just rained in from Shelburne in that opening half?
Yeah, it was mad. The worst half of football I've ever been involved in, I think. But they came out and they were so hungry for it, and to be honest, we weren't good enough on the day, and I think there was a lot of factors that came into that, and we'd been hit with a lot of injuries, and then to lose Laurie Ryan during the week as well to injury was really tough. But yeah, no, I think Shelburne were outstanding on the day and definitely deserved the cup.
But it shouldn't detract from what you and Athlone Town achieved this season.
No, I don't think so. I think initially it's tough to take a defeat like that. It was really hard on the day and the days after as well. And it can be hard to sort of forget about it and remember that we won the league. But I think now when we look back on it, we'll all reflect on the season as a really successful one. And yeah, just really proud to be a part of the team that won the first league title for Athlone.
And well, she should be. Athlone Town's Roisin Molloy, who's on the shortlist of six for the League of Ireland's Footballer of the Year. The overall winner will be announced early next month. Roisin's also into her final year of study for a degree in nutrition and health science at the ATU in Athlone. When we come back, we're off to Europe with Colera Strandhill LGFA. Plus, if you were to make a top 10 Gaelic football player of all time list for every position on the GAA pitch, who would make your lists and how many of them would be from Donegal, Leitrim or Sligo? Martin Breheny has the answer in his new book. Those stories are next.
The Final Whistle with Austin O'Callaghan.
Well, it's turning into a memorable 2024 for Colera Strandhill GAA and LGFA club in Sligo. Their men's football team have just retained the Ombi Hunt Cup, the Homeland Sligo Senior Football Championship title, and they await the winners of the Ballina Stephenites North London Shamrocks Connacht Club quarterfinal this weekend to see who they'll play in the semi-finals of the Provincial Championship in 2 weeks' time. But the club's women's team are off to the Dutch city of Maastricht in a couple of weeks' time to play their All-Ireland Junior Club quarterfinal. They'll take on the French side, Paris Bordeaux Gaels, known as Paris Birdie, an amalgamation of the GA units in the French capital and Bordeaux. And the match has been played in Maastricht because Maastricht Gaels' home ground is the county ground for the European GAA Association. Well, I've been talking to the Colera Strandhill management team of Vinnie Hart, Jerry Kilfeather and first Pat Kerrigan about the potential trip to the Netherlands.
Little did I know there was even a Gaelic club in it. Like, but yesterday when we found out, it was a great surprise to everyone. Then the whole thing started rocking and rolling. We didn't know where we were going to go, how we were going to get to it, where we were going to get. Is there any direct flights and stuff like that? Like, so yeah, it was a great. But finally, at least we got a destination and a time and a venue for the final.
And I suppose in some ways it adds to this exciting club championship adventure.
Oh yes, definitely. We were all on high dough since we won the Connacht final there, and like all the girls are couldn't wait to find out where we're going or whatever, like, you know. So
it could be Maastricht calling there, Pat.
Hopefully.
Well, Vinnie, what a few days it's been for Colera Strandhill, because a week after the women lifting the Connacht Club Championship title, the men said, we better get on our skates, and they go and retain the OB Hunt Cup.
Yeah, it has been a great couple of weeks for the club after the ladies doing so well and then the men following us last Sunday. It was a great occasion, and there's great buzz around for the last couple of weeks around the club. So we're really looking forward to heading off to Maastricht and see how it goes, and then the men are looking forward to the Connacht Championship in a couple of weeks. So it'll be all go for another. It'll shorten the winter around Colera anyhow. It'll be
well, by any standards, it's turning into a pretty special year for Colera Strandhill.
Yes, oh, it is. Yeah, because I suppose you never know with the ladies. It's just we got a bit of momentum going after our club final, and we have built on it from them games. We had a few tight games where just we had the rub of the green, but it's amazing when you get a bit of momentum going how things go forward.
And Jerry, the job the three of you have now is to bring the girls' feet back down to earth and tune back into the football again for this All-Ireland quarter-final.
Yeah, absolutely, Austin. And well, there really won't be any issue trying to get them to focus on it, because they've been focused all year. We played five matches 5 weeks in a row, and you could see the confidence building as the weeks went by. We had a few tough matches, tight matches, probably rode our luck a little bit, but you make your own luck as well. And I'll certainly never complain again about having to go all the way to Enniscrone to a game. It's certainly a novelty. Yeah,
yeah. Well, this is a novel trip. It's going to be a costly trip because it is overseas. And while you will be getting some assistance from the LGFA, Calera Strandhill already trying to raise some money themselves to fund this trip to the Netherlands.
Yeah, absolutely. And when we have the opportunity, we'd just like to thank yourself and your colleagues at Ocean for the coverage that you've given to the championship over the years, over the year, and particularly to ourselves. And we need to keep LGFA and ladies football front and centre, and keep it in the news and in the media, and you're helping in that regard. So we have a GoFundMe page. It can be accessed through our social media accounts. It's rolling along nicely, but we're going to need every cent of it because this is a costly trip. So hopefully, and the donations have been incredible from all over the county, from people that you just wouldn't expect. It's been fantastic so far, you know. So let's hope it continues.
And Vinny, people mightn't realise it does cost money to bring a group of players and their backroom team on a journey like this.
Oh, it's a massive logistical planning has to go into this, because when you bring a squad of over 30 players and management, you're up to over 40, and between flights, accommodation and all that, it's a big operation. So we're really delighted with all the sponsorship and funding that has come in from the locality and that, and we'd appeal for everyone to get behind us.
Just as a matter of interest, guys, there aren't any direct flights, Jerry, from Dublin to Maastricht, I don't think so. So how do you get there?
Well, we're looking at all the options. One of the options is to go to Eindhoven and maybe base ourselves there. The other option is Brussels. But it really, we'll look at the costings of the different options, and we should be able to figure all that out in the next couple of days.
It's like interviewing Ruud Gullit and Marco van Basten here, I tell you. Pat, let's have a talk about your opponents in this All-Ireland quarter-final, because just to add extra international dimension, it's a French team you're playing, Paris Bordeaux Gales, an amalgamation of the GA units in the French capital and Bordeaux. What info, if any, have you been able to glean from them?
Well, we've seen a bit of a match report on it, and we've seen a bit of the video of their final against Wandsworth Gales. Again, there have a lot of French homegrown girls in it, and there's a few Irish girls in it. Again, like it's like any game, and any game we've done this year, can't take nothing for granted, because you don't know what's going to turn up on the day. They seem to be strong enough in the forwards, midfield and stuff like that, but again, like, we'll just play, take every game as it is, and we'll just concentrate on our own game, like, you know.
So it's a trip for them as much as it is for you.
Definitely, yeah. Like, and again, we're really looking forward to it. It's a great chance to get a bit of a bonding session together for the girls, which we've been trying to do as well. Like, you know, so they're all on high dough. And again, I can't emphasise the amount of people that's GoFundMe page that give us so much money, and hopefully it'll keep going in, as Jerry said to it, and that, like, you know.
Any word that some Calera Strandhill supporters finally might try and rebook holidays to get a trip to the Netherlands in late November?
Yeah, there's been plenty of interest, you know, definitely from parents of the girls and Gales that are mad for a trip away. And it's unique to be playing in, we'll say, in Maastricht, on the continent, like, for our club. So it's going to be a great occasion, and we would think we will have good support there from all the community and that.
And to finish, Jerry, if people would like to make a donation to the GoFundMe page for Calera Strandhill, big or small, you'll welcome any contribution. How can they do that?
Yeah, if they go to the links are on our Instagram page and our Facebook page. So the links are there. I think you have a link on your own page, Austin, which we appreciate. So people can access it there. And listen, whatever they can give, however little or big it is, it's all very, very welcome. We'd be delighted to get it.
Jerry Kilfeather, Vinnie Hart and Pat Currigan, the management team of the Calera Strandhill Women's Gaelic Footballers. And if you'd like to make a contribution to their fundraising page to get to Maastricht in 2 weeks' time, they will get some help from the LGFA, but they are having to fund the bulk of it themselves. So on GoFundMe.com, look for Ransborough Park to Europe and you'll find the Calera Strandhill page there. And lots of generous donations already coming in. The game, incidentally, the quarterfinal against Paris Bordeaux Gales, is being played on Saturday, the 23rd of November in Maastricht, with a 3 o'clock throw-in Irish time. Well, finally, this evening, four footballers from Donegal
and one each from Sligo, Leitrim and Fermanagh have been included among the all-time greats in selections marking the 140th anniversary of the GAA's founding in 1884. Donegal stars Michael Murphy and Martin McHugh, Carl Lacey and Brian McAniff, Sligo's Micheál Cairns, Leitrim's Paddy McGarty and Fermanagh's Peter McGinnity all feature in a new book called Pulse of the Nation, which ranks the 150 greatest footballers and hurlers position by position. The book is written by award-winning and experienced GA journalists Martin Breheny and Donal Keenan, and it takes readers on a fascinating journey down through the decades. The first job, of course, was for the authors to consider who were the top 10 players in each position in the GAA's 140-year history. Here's Martin Breheny with his attempt to explain how they arrived at their final selections.
Well, Austin, in the short answer, with great difficulty, just to put this in context, so when Donal Keenan and I started out with this idea last year, about exactly this time last year, it was to mark the 140th anniversary of the GA, which of course was last Friday, the founding. And obviously we wanted to put players as the main event in it. And you know, we had to care for all the great players and all as best we could. But you know, sport is all about competition. So we wanted to make it a little bit competitive. And we came up with this idea that let's pick the top players in each position. We started off maybe doing the top 20, then we had to cut it to top 10 in each position. And in hurling and football. Now, I'm old enough, Donal's a little bit younger than I am, but I'm old enough, I'm exactly half the age of the GAA, so I was old enough to do the last 50, 60 years, and what the players I'd seen in that time. And for players before that, you know, we dealt with the teams of the century and teams of the millennium, people, and some of the great journalists, commentators, analysts who went before us, and the lists and players they had picked, and you know, players that stood out over the years. And obviously, you do tend to lean towards the latter times, because you know, if you go back to the 1930s or 20s around that time, the coverage was pretty scant everywhere, so it was very, very difficult to get. There were some outstanding people or players from that time, and they are included. But so we just decided, let's do it. Let's start a goalkeeper, and let's pick the 10 best goalkeepers that we bearing the our own experience and from before that, to the likes of Dan O'Keefe, who was obviously was on the team of the millennium and the team of the century. So that's how I went about it. It's not science. There is no science to this. It can't be scientific, and your opinion is as valid as mine, and everybody who hopefully reads the book, their opinion is as valid. But I think it's a starting point, and it's a debating point. And that, I think, is what gives it the interest, because people love arguing and debating who's the best in any position, be it at a club, be it in a county, whatever, over the years. So that was the starting point in which we got this thing going.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be one of those GA books where you won't start reading on page one. You're going to skip to your favourite player or position and wonder where your guy ended up. And let me give you one pernickety example. I had a look for Michael Murphy of Donegal. So I go to the full forward chapter, the top 10. He's not there. Oh, he must be in midfield. I go to the midfield section. He's not there either. You have him centre half forward, and he was a class centre half forward, and you have him highly ranked. Is that subjective, or do you base that on a series of games you remember of him in that position? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you should mention Michael Murphy. Michael Murphy played everywhere, as you know, from 8 to 15, really. I mean, he played all over the place. So the point was, our intention with Michael Murphy was this: to give him the highest ranking we could. He was eligible in so many positions, and we wanted to have him as high as we could. And we felt that, given the opposition, say at midfield and full forward, that he would have a chance of a higher ranking at centre forward, which is why I think we have him at number 3. So that was the thinking of Michael Murphy, because he obviously had to get it. We wanted him to be as high as he could, but some positions are incredibly competitive. No, they all are, obviously. But that was the reason there. And I think, in fairness, you know, in Michael's time and the latter years, positions meant damn all. And I remember seeing Michael playing against Tyrone a few games in Ballybofey, the first round of the championship, and he went about everywhere he possibly could to avoid two markers on him. So, I mean, he was just a class act, could play anywhere. So that's why we ended up with him at number three, I think, at centre half forward behind, I think, Sean Purcell. People would argue the greatest player of all time, can go all back in the 50s and 60s. and I think Larry Tompkins. So that's how we ended up Michael Murphy at centre forward at number three.
Yeah, and Michael is one of four Donegal players in the rankings. Martin McHugh also makes the centre half forward top 10. Carl Lacey at centre half back is in there at number six. And Brian McAniff, the player, not the manager, is in there as well at wing half back. And there probably are a generation of GA fans, Martin, who are too young to remember Brian McAniff, the player.
Absolutely, and Brian McAniff, the player, was outstanding. And the point is, as well, what people forget is that he was a player manager. So, if you know, again, that would influence your thinking insofar as if that he was not only just an outstanding wing back, but he was also the player manager in the early 70s. So, to manage that and to manage at a time when Donegal were making the breakthrough in Ulster. So that definitely coloured our view on Brian. Not that I need much colouring, I have to say, because I would always have regarded him as you know. And any team I know, as friends over the years, people from Ulster picking, say, their best team that's seen from Ulster and the whole lot, and Brian seemed to be an automatic choice there. So we would certainly go along with that.
Sligo and Leitrim get one player each on your list. They are, mind you, pretty good ones. Mickey Cairns is at left half forward. He makes the top three there, only Matt Connor and Pat Spillane ahead of them. So that gives us a strength straight away of the calibre of that particular position. Again, I suppose the latter part of his career, we'd remember him wearing 14 or maybe even 15, but I'm too young for this, but, you know, the people who are old enough to remember seeing Mickey Cairns play, you know, some of his greatest matches appear to have been when he was in the half-forward line.
They were, Austin. I mean, I saw Mickey in the 60s, in the playing for Sligo as a young fella, but he was up against, at that time, the Galway 3-in-a-row team, and he was outstanding. I mean, and they should have won the 65. They should have won the 65 Connacht final, Sligo. That he was just outstanding. And the thing about it was, as well, unlike nowadays, the treatment he got from the opposition was just ridiculous. I mean, he was fouled constantly. You weren't sent off. There were no black cards or yellow cards. You nearly have to take the head of somebody to get sent off. And back in those days, and he just was pulled and dragged all over the place. And yet they couldn't. He was outstanding, and Sligo also did very well around that time towards the early 70s in the National League. And of course with Connacht, that was where he really shone, especially as well, one of the places he shone when he was with the Galway 3-in-a-row team at that time. So there's no doubt. I think 12 was his best position. I think in latter years, as you say, he went into full forward, but 12 he would be recognised as that's his standout position.
Leitrim fans will be wondering who from their county got in. Paddy McGarthy makes your right corner forward top 10 of all time. Again, there's so little television footage and, you know, probably of him in his pomp, but there is a bit of radio footage somewhere, I think, in the museum in Ballinamore. But he was a special player back in the day.
Well, yeah, I have to admit now that there was a player now that we were relying on what we people have gone before us, but he was. I mean, the name Paddy McGarthy is absolutely synonymous with Leitrim, and at that time in the 50s and 60s, in fact, I think they got to four Connacht finals in a row, and again late 50s, I think it was, and up against Galway at that time. So, I mean, we just had to take, clearly he was on the Connacht team the whole lot, but he was chosen as well in 1984 on the best team never to win All-Ireland title, so I think that coloured our view as well. I mean, because if you mention Leitrim and Leitrim football, who was the best ever, or one of the greatest, Paddy McGarthy, I think his name has stood the test of time and always will.
Indeed. Fermanagh's Peter McGinnity also makes the midfield listing as well. Is there, away from the local counties here, Martin, is there one player, whether it's the hurling list or the football list, that you and Donal agonised over who didn't make it in the end?
Oh God, there was a lot. It's hard to think of. I know, for instance, in hurling, there was Paul Flynn of Waterford, but he didn't make it. I think, I'll give you an example now in football. I think it was Graham Geraghty. And the problem with Graham Geraghty was that he was a wing back and a right full forward, or a full forward. And that was one of the difficulties, Austin, because players who were very versatile, maybe they tended to lose out because they were up against people who were more or less permanent in that position or whatever. So that was an issue, because if you, okay, Mick O'Dwyer, for instance, Mick O'Made it all right, left full forward, having played the left back before that. But there were lots of them, trust me. That was the hardest thing we had to do. We literally took months, because we had to finish, we had the book to have that part of it finished, I think, by by the end of April. And right up to the last few days, we were checking and rechecking because and changing too, let me tell you, because it was just it's just so hard to do.
One other chapter I want to ask you about is our greatest days, county by county. Yeah. And here you and Donal pick the greatest day for that county in a football context and in a hurling one. So, you know, I sprint off to the Sligo and Leitrim chapters and you pick, obviously, the 1994 Connacht final, the late John O'Mahony managing Leitrim to that memorable one, and Leitrim's Laurie Mar Cup win against Lancashire, a lovely one in hurling. People here remember Declan Malloy saying, "Am I dreaming?" on the steps of the Hogan Stand. For Sligo, you went for Castlebar in 1975. Mickey Cairns in his 14th season, finally lifting the Connacht title. And Nicky Rackard's success for Sligo in 2008. Yeah. I actually went to the Kerry chapter here first, Martin, because I was thinking to myself, how on earth are they, which one did they pick for Kerry in terms of greatest days? So how did you, tell me the one you agreed on and why.
Yeah, and this might surprise people. We went for 1978 All-Ireland final, when that was the famous Mikey Sheehy goal against Dublin. And now, they won by 5-11 to 0-9, and people said, how the hell could that be Kerry's greatest day? But here's why. It was the day that ended, that began the four in a row, and indeed, as they were talking about, three more after that. But the Dublin-Kerry rivalry of that time, between 75, Kerry won, 76, 77, Dublin won. And Dublin were odds on favourites to make a 3-0 in 78. And if they had, almost certainly would have changed maybe the whole Kerry scene, because I think Mickle would probably have gone, if they had lost in 78. And we chose that because it was a nearer changing situation for Kerry. And there were so many, obviously, days you could pick for Kerry. But we chose that one rather than, say, for instance, in 1981 when they completed the 4-0. We just felt that the start of it, to end Dublin's dominance, if you like. And Dublin, they then beat Dublin again in 79 and the 84 and 85. So they broke Dublin, if you like. And that was why we chose them particularly. And then, of course, it was the circumstance. There were 6 points to one down after 20 minutes. And everybody thought, that's it, Dublin are on their way. And suddenly all changed. And that's how we chose it. I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with that, but that's the basis on which we went for the 78 All-Ireland.
You've another chapter as well called A Touch of Controversy, looking at some of those stories that got us all talking. And I suppose this is the journalist in us coming out as well, Martin. And I mean, the obvious ones are in there, Rule 42, the ban back in 1971, against the playing or promoting or watching of foreign sports back in the day. But there were a few that I had either forgotten about or didn't think might feature here, such as the Lee Miller benefit game at Porky Cueve, the RDS affair in 1991. Yeah. I was around. I can't really remember that one. And the Kerry footballers on the eve of the 1985 All-Ireland final involved in advertising, which back then was frowned upon, and the Cork hurlers turmoil, the strikes in the noughties as well. Of all of those, Martin, which one gave you the most calumniations, would you say, or which was the most contentious, if you had to pick one?
Well, I'd say, I mean, the ban would have been, or the ban was gone by the time before I got into journalism, but the ban would be, the other one, I suppose, one you didn't mention there, I suppose, would have been the opening of Croke Park, which was very controversial in 2001, failed by a single vote to get the 2000 majority, and it was another 5 years before it was. But it changed so much because, you know, the people were so entrenched at that time in their views on that, and it was, I think, a great pity it didn't change in 2001, because a lot of things might have, well, stadium policy might have been different if it had. But the ban is the one that stands the test of time in the history of the GAA, really. I mean, because it ran for, it was so divisive, and it took up right up to 1971 to get rid of it. And then, of course, things changed so dramatically after it. So the idea that, you know, if you were, not alone if you played soccer or rugby or cricket or whatever, but if you actually had any input into any activity involving those sports. I mean, Tom Chiesty, the Waterford hurler, was suspended for attending a dance run by a soccer or rugby club. So it was heavy stuff. Like, I mean, if you were caught in any, having any ridiculous, but there you go. That was of the time. And some of the debates that we carried, one of the things there also, you will note in the book as well, that we've gone back through the various congresses, standout and quotes from people and all that through the various congresses. And if you notice, the ban and discussions on the ban how emotive they were right through the 40s, 50s and 60s, mostly entrenched positions that we shall not change. So that, of course, did change in 1971. But the ban, I suppose, would have been the standout one in terms of in the overall GAA history.
The voice of Martin Breheny, who has co-written Pulse of the Nation, GAA 140 Years, Rankings, Ratings, Tales and Drama, alongside Donald Keenan, his co-author. And they probably should add the word arguments to that subtitle as well, because this book is sure to generate a few of those as well. And you'll find it in all good bookshops and the usual places. A reminder, finally, this programme is available as a podcast each week on oceanfm.ie, and wherever you get your podcasts, search for Ocean FM Sport or The Final Whistle to find it. We've no Final Whistle next Thursday. We're back in 2 weeks' time. Same time, same place.